Funding for Here and Now Anytime comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
Hi, this is Here and Now Anytime, where we give you a little news, a little something you weren't expecting, and always a fresh, in-depth perspective on current events, arts and culture, and stories that matter. Subscribe or follow to get all our episodes out every weekday. And if you like what you hear, tell a friend about us to help spread the word. Now, here's the show.
They have shown us in the last couple of days using their drone technology that they do have the ability to go after key government installations. Is the goal to put their own person in the palace? Is it that they want to take down the government? We don't know.
A massive jailbreak in Haiti. It's Monday, March 4th, and this is Here and Now Anytime from NPR and WBUR Boston. I'm Chris Bentley. Coming up on today's show, is our American political system addicted to chaos? Also, actor Paul Giamatti on his Oscar-nominated turn in The Holdovers.
The mustache was actually very inspired by a biology teacher I had who had a very walrusy mustache that I couldn't get out of my head when I played this character. I thought the guy had to have that same walrusy mustache, so I grew one.
That's coming up in about 15 minutes. But first, there is a remarkable story unfolding today in Haiti, where the entire country is under a state of emergency. Over the weekend, gangs attacked Haiti's international airport, took over police stations, and stormed two of the country's largest prisons. Thousands of people were released from their cells, and the government says convicted killers and kidnappers are among those who are now free. Miami Herald reporter Jacqueline Charles has been following this. Here's what she told Peter O'Dowd.
Yes, so we had attacks on two prisons. The main prison had nearly 4,000 inmates. Today it is practically empty. Among the individuals who have escaped are a number of notorious gang leaders, as well as individuals who have been indicted in the assassination of Haitian President Jovenel Moïse. What we understand is that the gangs use drones in order to report back on, you know, the position of prison guards, and then they went in. And you know, video shared yesterday by some journalists who visited, they show that the place has been completely ransacked. Some prisoners have been killed. Some of them have been injured. We're still waiting to hear from the government exactly how many prisoners escaped.
Now, we've reported on the proliferation of gangs in Haiti. Their power is nothing new, but this is just a stunning development. What would motivate these gangs to release thousands of people from prison?
Well, that is what we're trying to understand here. And it wasn't just an isolated incident. These gangs are now coordinated. This prison attack, which they did using drones, it came after they also attacked the ports, after they also attacked police substations. They targeted the police academy. So what we've been watching is that they've been going after key government installations in the last couple of days.
Now, at least nine people are dead, I understand, including four police officers. What's happening now that the prisoners are set free? What's happening today?
Well, yes, we are still waiting to see, you know, what, you know, the tally is, but everybody is just watching and waiting for Prime Minister Ariel Henry to return to the country. He was in Kenya, where he was finalizing negotiations on the deployment of a Kenya-led multinational security support mission that both the United States and the UN support. We have no date on when that mission will arrive in Haiti, but the gangs have said that they are out to depose him, and we are watching to see what their reaction is going to be if and when he arrives back in the country. Today, all international flights out of South Florida into Port-au-Prince, they have been canceled. So again, how is he going to get in? Is he going to come in through the capital or through another international airport? There are a lot of unknowns at this point. Things are a little bit calm in the capital, but we're watching.
That's his immediate fate. Long-term, how could this maybe affect his how does this upheaval affect the prime minister's fate long-term?
Well, you know, yesterday we received a statement from the White House, and they basically are saying, you know, the violence is unacceptable and Haitians need to come together in order to go to elections. This is a country today that doesn't have any elected officials. Almost 3 years after the assassination of Jovenel Moïse, it remains in a political paralysis. Both sides have not been able to come to any sort of agreement. But the one thing that everybody says, you cannot have an election when you have this kind of insecurity on the landscape. So the first thing needs to be to bring the security situation under control, figure out how do you put together a deal that will allow for the governance or the planning of an election. But, you know, Haitians are frustrated. They're tired. They're afraid. I mean, today with, you know, criminals running amok and they don't know where they are, they're staying off the streets, not just because of the state of emergency, but because of the fear. We already have over 300,000 people that have basically been forced from their homes by gangs in the last couple of years.
Right. And the security situation in Haiti has been incredibly dire for many years, as you say, even before the assassination of the country's president in 2021. In all your years of reporting on Haiti, have you ever seen anything like this?
No, this is the worst that it has been, and this is everybody's worst nightmare, because what we've seen the last couple of days is the gangs are much more coordinated and they're talking to one another. You know, before they would just focus on certain areas or certain neighborhoods and they weren't necessarily in communication. But what they have shown us in the last couple of days using their drone technology, releasing voice notes saying that, you know, here's who they're going to target. You know, we're on top of the National Palace. What we're seeing is that they are communicating and that they do have the ability to go after key government installations. Is the goal to put their own person in the palace? Is it that they want to take down the government? We don't know, but that's what we're watching.
All right. Miami Herald reporter Jacqueline Charles, we will be keeping a close eye on this story. Thank you very much for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Well, next to what's happening in Haiti, the political situation here is very stable. But it doesn't take a political scientist to say that things have been hectic in American politics in recent years. And it's not all thanks to Trump, though he certainly thrives on chaos. After the break, Peter has more on new research into why it seems like American politics is addicted to chaos. Stick around.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Teladoc Health. There are lots of reasons for wanting to be healthy. Family, work, living a fuller life. Teladoc Health understands. Whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or just need to manage your weight, Teladoc Health can help. Visit teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy for more information. That's teladochealth/whatsyourwhy.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Rosetta Stone, the perfect app to achieve your language learning goals no matter how busy your schedule gets. It's designed to maximize study time with immersive 10-minute lessons and audio practice for your commute. Plus, tailor your learning plan for specific objectives like travel. Get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off and unlimited access to 25 language courses. Learn more at rosettastone.com/NPR.
Are Americans in their chaos era? Well, some of you may be thinking yes, obviously, and it's about time you asked. The Atlantic's Derek Thompson has been writing about a body of research that unpacks the need that some Americans feel for chaos in politics. Derek joins us now on a Skype line. And Derek, you know, I guess we've literally seen chaos in American politics in recent years. I'm thinking January 6th, but what kind of havoc are we talking about here exactly?
Yeah, January 6th in particular, definitely being the greatest example of chaos being fomented by President Donald Trump. But I really think that what's most interesting to me is the fact that you have, I think, within this electorate, a group of people who see politics through this lens of sometimes entertainment, sometimes mere frustration, where what they want, above all, is a sense of chaos in the system. They like people like Donald Trump. They like people that come from outside the system to smash things up, to burn them to the ground. And I think it's really difficult if you're a party like the Democrats looking at politics and saying, well, we want to solve problems here. We want to argue against the chaos agents in the world. Well, maybe there just is a certain segment of the electorate that sees chaos as a positive rather than a negative.
Mm. The research that you're looking at says that people need it. They feel this need for it. It's a mindset to gain status by destroying the established order. But why? What does this sense of chaos do for people?
It's a really, really good question. So this comes from research by the Danish political psychologist Michael Bang Petersen and several Danish and French researchers. And they were interested, first and foremost, in why people share conspiracy theories about people from both political parties in the U.S., both Democrats and Republicans. Mm-hmm. And they said that it really comes down to a trio of motivating factors. First off, they said there's clearly a certain amount of status anxiety that exists among certain voters, particularly, they said, among less educated white men, a sense of status anxiety, that the rules of society, whether economic or social or cultural, seem to be moving beyond them. The second thing is a factor that they called sort of a preference for old-fashioned patriarchal values. Those seem to also be a motivating factor for wanting to share chaotic stories about the world. And finally, I think there's a lot of people who are frustrated with elites, not only because they're sort of making this up, but also because there have been a lot of elite failures, whether it's the pandemic and public health policy or the economy and rampant inflation, a lot of perceived and very real problems with elites that has led to this sense of, well, if elites can't figure out how to run this machine, I might as well just blow it up.
Yeah. Now, you've mentioned Donald Trump's name. He has put his finger on a lot of what you just mentioned. I want to listen to this tape from his only remaining opponent in the presidential primaries, Nikki Haley, criticizing Trump on the campaign trail last week in Colorado.
Everywhere he goes, chaos follows him. And we can't be a country in disarray and a world on fire and go through four more years of chaos. We wouldn't survive it.
Now, if I'm hearing you correctly, Haley might actually be missing the point here. For supporters of Donald Trump, chaos is not a flaw, it's a selling point.
I think it's exactly right. You know, I have no idea exactly what sequence of words is going to take people who love Donald Trump and make them dislike Donald Trump. So it's possible that people like Nikki Haley are simply fighting an unwinnable battle. But let's run the tape. In 2015, when Trump announced his candidacy, Jeb Bush called him a chaos candidate. Today, Nikki Haley is calling him a chaos candidate. The Biden team right now, even though they're down, I think in the New York Times, 5 or 6 percentage points in national polls, are again calling him a chaos candidate. I'm not claiming any kind of particular expertise in what tens of millions of Americans that I've never met really think about Donald Trump. But it does seem like if you look at the historical record, well, people have called Trump a chaos agent now for 9 years, and it doesn't seem to be having the dent that they think it will be.
And just briefly here, we've been talking about Republicans, but do you find that voices on the left are also willing to embrace chaos as a solution to getting what they want?
I find it. I've seen it. And it's not just me. Also, these researchers, these Danish and French researchers, when they ask people about why they wanted to share conspiracy theories about any elite, Democratic or Republican, said, no, it's not just white people. It's not just white men. In fact, a lot of non-white Americans, a lot of younger non-white men in particular, also seem to fit this so-called chaos cohort. That is, they like to share stories online that call for burning down the system, whether or not there's any solution to be found. That, I think, speaks to deep frustration in this electorate.
It does abound. The Atlantic's Derek Thompson, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Coming up, the Oscars are this week. And when we return, Robin Young speaks with Paul Giamatti about his role in The Holdovers, which earned him a nomination for Best Actor. That's after the break.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Progressive Insurance, where drivers who switch could save hundreds on car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Support for NPR and the following message come from Betterment, an automated investing and savings app. CEO Sarah Levy shares why accessibility is central to Betterment's mission.
The real innovation for Betterment was taking a set of tools that were used by the ultra wealthy and making them accessible to the average investor. And that includes tax strategies, that includes dollar cost averaging. These are all sort of tricks of the trade.
Learn more about automated investing technology at Betterment.com. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
This message is brought to you by NPR sponsor Progressive Insurance. You call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. Tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options within your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Support for NPR and the following message come from the Wallace Foundation, working to develop and share practices that can improve learning and enrichment for young people and the vitality of the arts for everyone. Ideas and information at wallacefoundation.org.
The Academy Awards are this Sunday, and Paul Giamatti is up for Best Actor Oscar for his performance in The Holdovers. He's already picked up a Golden Globe and a Critics' Choice Award. And those eyes, Wesley Morris praised him for the best acting above the nose in the New York Times. Giamatti plays a professor of ancient history at Barton Academy, an exclusive New England boarding school. You might think we are in Dead Poets Society territory, but no. Paul Giamatti's professor, with a woe-begone face, equally baggy khakis and corduroy jacket, is more the Grinch who stole Christmas as he hands out exams to students heading for their holiday break.
I can tell by your faces that many of you are shocked at the outcome. I, on the other hand, am not, because I have had the misfortune of teaching you this semester, and even with my ocular limitations, I witness firsthand your glazed, uncomprehending expressions.
Professor Hunnam's ocular limitation is one eye wanders. He also smells like fish because of another affliction. He happily fails the sons of big donors. He is not liked. But he's forced to take care of Angus, played by Dominic Sessa, whose parents don't pick him up for break. He and his professor ultimately bond with a kitchen worker whose son was just killed in Vietnam. She's played by Divine Joy Randolph, who's also been nominated for an Oscar. The Holdovers received 5 nods, including Best Picture, and Paul Giamatti joined us to talk about the film last November. I hope you haven't been injured by the rave reviews being thrown at you.
No, we're back from the strike that we were on, so it's a pleasure to actually be doing this
and to be talking about this lovely.
Indeed,
film.
It's a lovely movie to talk about.
Well, let's talk about it. The script is from David Hemmingson. It's directed by Alexander Payne. You've worked with him before, Sideways. We'll talk about that. But as you all put together this character, if you had to make a visual board, and maybe you did, you know, sort of a collage of the different things that would make him who he is. Who is he?
I think a pipe is really important. He's the teacher that you've had that's extremely strict and a bit mean and a bit tough. And he's idealistic and he goes a little too far in those things. But he's actually not a bad guy underneath all of his sarcastic bravado.
And tweed. Under the
and his tweed corduroy and his corduroy and his pipe smoke and his smelling like fish and his sweaty palms. You forgot sweaty palms. He has sweaty palms.
Right. Well, how did you, as an actor, use your own face? Now, you've talked about this before. You know, you've said you didn't have a leading man face. And lucky you, because you became this tremendous character actor and now you are the leading man. We just spoke with critic Dwight Garner. In his memoir, he describes his coal mining relatives eating venison through awnings of grateful mustache. you got one of those. But the eye, did you? I don't think I've seen you have a wandering eye. Are you wearing a glass eye?
I am really enjoying being indirect and evasive about the eye.
Well, it's freaking me out. I'll have to tell you.
Yeah, well, good. It should. And the idea, and you're not supposed to be able to tell what's going on. The mustache was actually very inspired by a biology teacher I had who had a very walrusy mustache that I couldn't get out of my head when I played this character. I thought the guy had to have that same walrusy mustache, so I grew one.
Another ingredient I'd have to say in this character is one of the same ones that your character had in Sideways, the 2004 Oscar-winning film directed by Alexander Payne. If you look it up, there's a synopsis. 2 men reaching middle age with not much to show but disappointment as they travel through California's wine country. Disappointment is an element. Is this a teacher you might have known in prep school?
Yes, the guy that I'm saying who had the big old walrusy mustache was a guy that I had. And, you know, even as a kid, I think I clocked that there was some bitterness in these guys that, you know, was probably shaping a lot of their attitude towards the students.
Right.
But even so, I could recognize with this guy that he actually cared as a teacher. So that was important for me to recognize, too.
Wow. Is he still with us? Do you get to tell him that?
I doubt he is. I can't believe that he is.
Oh, I hope he's listening, though.
I would love if he was still around. Because I really did, in the end, think that he was a lovely teacher and a really good teacher. I learned a lot from him.
Yeah.
You know, but he was not an easy guy. That's for sure.
Well, and because of what you just described, these are some of the most learned people, the tweetiest of and most pipe smoking, and yet their students' families, you know, have buckets more money than they ever will, teaching and shaping them.
And for sure, this guy feels that class thing for sure. You know, he's not from a background like this, and he's at the service of these people. But you know, you realize these guys really do care. It's sad to me. Well, something that struck me in this when we were filming it, that only when we were filming the scene when he and I sort of part ways at the end, is that he will never see this kid again. And so many of these teachers never see these kids again.
Right.
That, you know, whether they show it or not, they really care about.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that. I want to play a scene of you with Angus Tully, played by Dominic Sessa. My, this is his first acting job. But we'll talk about that. But your character, again, is babysitting what ends up being just one student, something you do not want to do. Let's listen.
Do you think I want to be babysitting you? Oh, no, no. I was praying to the God I don't even believe in that your mother would pick up the phone or your father would arrive in a helicopter or a submarine or a flying saucer to take you.
My father's dead.
My father is dead. We're not going to give any plot twists, but here you have a fatherless child, a childless professor. Talk about just a little bit of working with Dominic Sessa and that relationship you were talking about.
It mimicked the relationship in the movie because I felt really warm towards the guy. And I was watching this person at the beginning of what he's doing. And so is the professor. The teacher is watching this kid doing what he's doing at the beginning of his life. And so it made me, it was extraordinary just watching him and being with him and feeling rapport with him. Yeah, he's a lovely, lovely guy.
Well, so here you have these two characters bonding, both whip smart, sensitive, but trying their hardest not to be sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering if we might ask about another influence. You have acknowledged, you just talked about a professor, but you've said your late dad, A. Bartlett Giamatti, a professor, former president of Yale, head of Major League Baseball for a while. I think he influenced your choice of the jacket.
Yes, that's true. The overcoat I wear. And that was one of the only times Alexander and I have ever had a moment of going, I don't know about this. He had a jacket that was very specific that he wanted me to wear. And I thought, it's too grand looking. He's a more practical guy. He doesn't have the money to buy a big expensive coat. And not only my father had a coat like that, but all of these academics that I could remember had that kind of hooded coat with the toggle buttons like that. And I thought, I have to have one of those because that's what I remember all those guys wearing. That really stood out in my head. And I was like, that's what I got to have. And Alexander, being who he is, was like, okay, if that's the jacket you need. And then he was like, oh, no, that's the right jacket. You're right.
In this film, in Sideways, your acclaimed TV show Billions, you play characters that aren't always likable.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I was playing around in Google. A lot of people ask, is Paul Giamatti nice at all?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that you begin to, you know, acting is a weird thing. And people really begin to believe what they're seeing. And increasingly in the world with the sort of, you know, reality television and TikTok, people believe that what they're seeing is the authentic thing. So I understand it.
Well, you are, of course, the voices rise up to say. But we're wondering, I mean, maybe directors, and certainly Alexander Payne has sought you out, seek you out because you know these people are human.
Yes, I think maybe that's true. I mean, I play complicated people, which is a nice thing to be stuck playing. I clearly have some inclination to want to find the humanity in a person that people don't like or find something unlikable in somebody that people do like, you know, and find what's funny and what's sad and what's sad and what's funny. Mm. I just have a kind of contrary thing where I want to seek out the opposite in something.
Yeah. Well, as you said in the film, the professor and the student part. And that happens thousands of times every single day, you know, when kids graduate. And you felt that in your heart. And you're sending the professor off onto the world stage. You're letting go. You and the professor are parting. Your thoughts?
Yeah. Yeah. And I really like this character, actually. It's funny, you know, he's difficult. But I think of him as, you know, he's got a lot of odd dignity and he takes a lot of pleasure in things. He takes pleasure in being a jerk in some ways. But there's something kind of tough about him that I actually liked. You know, he's not self-pitying in some way. And I liked this guy, actually, more so than a lot of the people I have to do. I have to find a way to like them. But I liked this guy. Mm. You know, I felt a lot of compassion for him. I really liked him. So yeah. I will miss him. Yeah.
Well, I liked him, too.
Good.
That's Paul Giamatti, star of The Holdovers. Paul, thank you so much.
Thank you. It was a pleasure. Thanks.
That's our show for today. Here and Now Anytime comes from the team behind Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston. Today's stories were produced by Sam Rapelson, Gabrielle Healy, and Emiko Tamagawa. Today's editors were Todd Munt, Micaela Rodriguez, and Kat Welch. Technical direction from Mike Moschetto and Caleb Green. Mike Moschetto also wrote our theme music along with Max Liebman and me, Chris Bentley. Our digital producers are Allison Hagen and Grace Griffin, and the executive producer of Here and Now is Carlene Watson. Thanks for listening. We'll be back with you tomorrow.
This message is brought to you by NPR sponsor, Lisa, in collaboration with West Elm. Discover the new natural hybrid mattress, expertly crafted from natural latex and certified safe foams, designed with your health and the planet in mind. Visit leesa.com to learn more.
Support for NPR and the following message come from IXL Online. Is your child asking questions on their homework you don't feel equipped to answer? IXL Learning uses advanced algorithms to give the right help to each kid, no matter the age or personality. One subscription gets you everything. One site for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And NPR listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/NPR.
In this country, some truths aren't self-evident. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of stories as wide-ranging and real as the people who tell them, we celebrate the Black experience for all its soul and richness. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get podcasts.